my bones. Hello, everyone.
Yeah.
Just to give you context, I am in charge of the podcast recording this week. So that's exciting.
I'm going to like purposely edit this really bad and then just go, yeah, it's Alex's fault. She was in charge of the recording this week.
Asshole. I can well imagine.
Obviously,
you
I'm just
going to
edit
well.
Me saying that out so no one will ever know.
It just comes back in with me talking shit about VR, like, that doesn't seem suspicious about at all. No, definitely no editing being done here. Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm attempting to stave off boredom. Struggling.
So the productivity and the creativity kick worn off now?
It varies from day to day. I think like yesterday I was having a bit of a day of self-reflection. I think I was like having like your little existential crisis that you had.
Oh, like, always, yes.
I'm like, oh, you know, because obviously with everything going on and rumblings are saying that this could go on for the best part of the rest of the year, which kind of foobars everything just a smidge. And you're like, okay, well, where?
Just a little.
Where's my income coming from now then?
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, maybe I was never good at this in the first place.
maybe this is the world telling me
to sit
down and shut up.
This is the universe. Yeah, look, mate, I've tried to tell you before, you're not really good at this. And now I've had to throw a pandemic at the world.
I don't think that's true, but I totally understand why you would feel like that. And as someone who is very well versed with self-reflection and self-flagellation, I believe the word is, I totally get you. But I think what's interesting is I was having a conversation with my dad about the fact that you probably have, not to give your age away, but you're a little bit older than me, aren't you? But we've not really lived through a recession for a long time. No shade. You see how I was like quickly moving on from that. You're old. Anyway, moving on.
I am. I'm not even going to deny it. I am.
But like, I don't know. Have you ever lived, like, can you remember the hardship of 2008?
Right, now this is getting a bit hard. 2008. Yeah, vaguely.
It didn't like massively impact you.
Well, I wasn't, no, because I wasn't self-employed then, back then. So, that was back in the old days when I had a reliable income each month. That was lovely.
Mm. And was that like, that wasn't affected at all during the recession? You were like, you were still good?
No, I was fine. I don't remember.
Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah, I don't remember it being anything major. I mean, obviously, it was on the news quite a lot, but I don't, like, it never affected me personally or anyone I know or knew.
So, in that context, then, it feels like we are in the same boat because I was just going to uni when that recession hit. And I think the thing that I keep kind of coming back to, and this is like a Gary Vee phrases, like, you don't really know what you're made of until you've been punched in the mouth. Like, I think it's based on like a boxer quote. I think, is it Muhammad Ali or someone, a famous Tyson? Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Someone said, like, you, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And like, this is like obviously something that literally hasn't been seen for a century. So, how, like, literally no one could have been prepared for this. This is not a normal, like just economic like breakdown. But I think what's interesting is it is kind of, this is our version of, like, this is our first kind of, you know, real test in our kind of professional careers. And I think there will be like a lot of hardship ahead. And I think it will, I don't know, it makes me really quite glad in a sense that I didn't try and scale up like a lot of VR companies. Like, I don't know whether you saw the news about Magic Leap laying off like half its staff, and it's like, you know, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people in this industry, and good on them, because you need visionaries and you need pioneers to like push the movement forward, but I think people can sometimes try and run before they walk in this industry, and this is going to be like a hard slog. And I think this is our version of that, like slow and steady, trying to get through this. And there will be like a lot of casualties along the way, which is really sad, because obviously we'll know people in the VR industry that will have to step away from it, and that sucks. But at the same time, this is also a really interesting time to kind of reinvent what we're doing. It's funny, we're like literally I was like having my existential meltdown last time we recorded, and now you are, and now I'm the positive one.
But it's weird because I was feeling like that yesterday, and then I started watching some of my old stuff back, and I was like, yeah, actually, you know, it's not as bad as I made it out to be in my head. Like, this is right. This kind of.
What do you mean, like old stuff, like VR stuff or traditional
just
stuff?
Just a bit of everything. Just a little bit of everything. I don't know. I was just kind of, I was in a weird mood, I think.
Yeah.
And I was just like watching other stuff, other people's stuff, and I was like, oh, you know, it looks really good.
I think
shit in comparison. But weirdly enough, so. It just shows how much of a difference 24 hours can make. So this morning, because also this kind of also coincides with the where am I going to get paid from next? So this morning I got an email from a production company, asking if I would be interested in licensing one of my Instagram posts to them for a commercial.
No way!
So yeah,
that's amazing.
That's pretty crazy.
Which post is it?
It's one of, it's a 360 one. Just like technically it's a tiny planet, although it's not really a tiny planet because the camera's in a fridge. But it's me looking into like my empty fridge. And they were interested in using it for a commercial.
That's amazing.
So that's pretty, yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I wasn't expecting payment or anything like that. I just thought, oh, it'd be cool to be in a commercial, I guess. That'd be quite smart. And then the guy emailed me back with a figure, and I was just like, holy shit.
Oh, really? Was it good? What were we talking? Talking four figures? What were we talking?
Oh, no. We're talking three figures.
All right, nice. Okay. High figures, middle?
Middling. Yeah, middle.
Oh, nice. But that's really cool.
For doing nothing.
Well, that's the beauty, isn't it? Is it a TV commercial?
Yeah.
It's interesting because the way that, I mean, I don't know, it's been a while since I've been in the TV game, but like from what I remember, you could, if you wanted to, you could negotiate like residuals on that, because every time the TV commercial is played, like for example, the music on a TV advert, every time it's played, someone gets royalties. So, I mean, obviously, if you're like, fuck yeah, I'm having this money and I'm not even going to question it. But yeah, I know I've some people that do that. It's kind of like the sought after kind of passive, like, it's the high end stock stuff, isn't it? Basically, it's like a bet, kind of a similar thing to that.
Yeah, but it was quite interesting see that. So that these commercials are still being made, you know, despite everyone, you know, under quarantine.
Oh yeah, it was interesting. I had a chat with a friend of mine. Well, say friend, like she's one of these people that I've only met in person once, but we were on the Drums 50 under 30 list together, and we like met at like the kind of the networking night that we had. And we've like vaguely stayed in touch online. And anyway, we, for the first time for a while, we like jumped on and had a chat, and she works at a big creative agency in London. And she was saying exactly the same thing. Like, you know, when all of your income comes from productions, like getting out on location and shooting, she thought, oh crap, like this is not good. But apparently they've had like TV commercials signed off, which are going to be shot completely remotely, as in they're sending cameras to the actors, the director will direct them over Zoom, and obviously all the concepts around, like even like just watching some of the TV adverts that are on at the moment, it's quite interesting because they are they're all relevant. And it's like, you'd think, it used to be that you would think that it'd take like months for a TV advert to be, you know, filmed, edited, and then, you know, get on TV, but this just proves that the turnaround is super quick.
It's crazy.
It's really quite cool. It's very I don't know, it's a much needed innovative shake-up. I don't know whether you caught any of the Big Night In last night on BBC.
Nope.
Did you watch any of it?
Nope.
Oh, it was like this big, like obviously they normally do comic relief and children in need, and they basically brought it together and did this big live show. And I was just fascinated on how they were going to pull that off, because I was like, you know, those events are built on the fact that there are thousands of people in a studio audience. It's like huge productions, massively interactive, you know, and actually it was actually really good. The way they did it was basically everything was done live over Zoom. Basically they had like three presenters who were distanced from each other in a studio, but tiny studio compared to what they would have. And then everything, like they brought back Little Britain and they were doing like sketches over Zoom, Catherine Tate, like some of like these classic British sketch shows, Vicar of Dibley, and they were all doing these like funny little like Zoom sketches. And I just thought, not that that's how it's going to be forever, because people are used to a certain quality on TV, but it just shows that like this is a really good opportunity to kind of reinvent creativity and like think outside of the box a little bit and go back to the idea itself rather than the tech that that kind of delivers it.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's
there you go.
Weird. It's a weird world.
Turn your VR comedy series into a Zoom web series.
Yeah, yeah, it's completely changed. Speaking of which, though, things have changed. Obviously, mm-hmm. you posted about the stuff playing in Tribeca the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a little watch and stuff. What did you think? Did you watch them all? Or?
Yeah, I watched most of them. There was I would say 50% where, I'm not going to lie, I did skip through them, which I actually really enjoy about the fact that I really enjoy that about watching stuff at home. Like, because obviously in the context of a festival, you wouldn't get the choice. You would have to sit there. And yes, there is something to be said for like, you know, giving the artist the attention they deserve. But I actually really hate being in a headset for more than an hour. It hurts my head like really badly. It gives me a really bad headache. So so I picked the ones like that I definitely knew I wanted to pay attention to. And those were really what I was looking at, were 360 pieces that were using interesting uses of direction and content that I thought was more aligned with what I'm interested in, which is more kind of narrative based stuff rather than watching some of the documentaries and that kind of thing. But overall, I thought there was some fantastic pieces, and I thought there was definitely a couple of standouts for me. But yeah, I'll let you I'll ask the question
I want to know what your standouts are. I think I know what they are anyway, but for people
that... Yeah, I mean, I kind of already posted about them, but the standouts for me in terms of and again, I was purely looking at it from like a kind of like a technical point of view. Like, I don't know, there's something about watching VR pieces, I can't enjoy them as a consumer. I just can't. I just like constantly analyze them. I think that's the plague of anyone that works in a particular field. You just can't unnotice stuff. So for me, it was Black Bag. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I thought that, I mean, definitely the opening 3-4 minutes I thought was absolutely genius. I thought it was so simple, but the use of like shadows to direct attention, the use of like a constant moving camera, but like the I mean, for anyone who's not seen it, who's listening to this, basically you're kind of going down this like tunnel almost, would you say?
And
feels like this kind of never-ending tunnel, but you're like, you're turning, and even like something, for example, where you turn a corner, but they don't force what the thing I enjoyed about it was, it was purely using the audience's attention. They didn't ever move the camera. They didn't force your perspective. And that's something that I've been really thinking about. And obviously that piece is not 360 in the terms of, it wasn't filmed. It was created in the game engine or using After Effects, something animating.
Yeah,
yeah. So that had a bit more control.
The technical term.
The technical term, animating. I thought that was just absolutely phenomenal. Genuinely, like one of the best. I think that's probably one of the best uses of directing in a 360 piece, like a passive 360 piece that I've ever seen. So that was awesome. I really liked Attack on Daddy, just because I found it was like one of the only pieces that kept my attention the whole way through. I thought it was like, I knew at some point someone was going to make a dollhouse related VR piece, and I hadn't seen one. So to watch it play out, knowing that like that would be the perfect kind of location for a VR piece, I thought that was really funny. And also just like, it was just complete batshit bonkers, like, which I enjoyed. And then the last one that I really kind of, you know, had like a lasting impact on me was The Key, which is not a 360 piece. It was interactive, mm-hmm. but it's one that's kind of like got a lot of critical acclaim, and I hadn't gotten to see it yet. So it was good to finally see it. And I'm not going to lie. I think because I knew so much about it going into it, and I kind of had already heard so much about it, I definitely wasn't like, you know, immediately blown away. But by the end, especially the last scene, which was so simple, it was just a voiceover over this photogrammetry set of, spoiler alert, a refugee kind of, it's not a refugee camp, it's basically where a refugee would have come from, like their home that had been bombed, mm-hmm. and it was like a photogrammetry set and you could walk around it. And I've never actually seen anything done in photogrammetry in a headset before. I've only ever seen it like Matterport scans and stuff mm-hmm. online. So, honest to God, it blew my mind. I spent about a good 10 minutes just walking around, just that one. It was just one set and nothing was happening. It was so good. And I was like, holy crap. Like, okay, I get it now. Like, I get why the virtual tour industry is going to be absolutely massive. So yeah, those were my three big ones. What about you? Tell me about your stand-up piece.
So yeah, I'd have to agree with you on a Black Bag. Mm-hmm. Although I probably should have read the synopsis before going in, because
okay,
I had no idea what was going on. I was just like, this is
oh no, mental. Me neither. I still couldn't tell you what the storyline was.
I mean, I kind of got little bits and pieces, but it made more sense after, like, when I read the synopsis afterwards. But yeah, like you said, that opening 3 or 4 minutes, and yeah, the use of light and shadows to direct attention was pretty incredible. And quite an eye opener, actually. And the animation was really good as well. I quite liked it. It was the style of the animation was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it reminded me of kind of like that Gorillaz style. Do you remember the band the Gorillaz? And they videos had that kind of style to it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to describe it, actually. Yeah, no, it looked Elizabeth, you're welcome. They should put that on a poster.
Thank you. It's basically Gorillaz music video, but it's a thriller.
I must admit, I wasn't overly keen on Attack on Daddy.
Yeah, you said this on Instagram. I thought that would be a bit of me.
I think it's anything that's subtitled, I always find it's a little bit of a struggle. In terms of the placement of the subtitles. I found that sometimes the subs were a little bit out of the line of sight of where I assume that I'm meant to be looking.
Good point. Yeah, so that is a good point.
That threw me a little bit. And also, I'm not a big fan of cats. So I don't want to see a giant cat. At one point, that giant cat just staring at me. I'm like, no, I don't like this.
Oh, I love that.
I don't want this at all. It was bizarre. But then I don't know. I guess I kind of expected that. But I don't know. I wasn't overly keen.
I totally agree with you. Just quickly on that one, I think that it's absolutely a piece where it's a novelty, and not to trivialize that artist, because I'm sure, you know, like, honestly, obviously there was a lot that went into it.
I certainly appreciate the work that went into it. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I totally agree with you. It's kind of like you wouldn't go back and watch it again necessarily. It was more like it wasn't really the storyline of what was actually being said. It was for me anyway. It was basically just the premise. That really hooked me, because I was like, yeah, that's good. Being attacked in a dollhouse by crazy murderous rabbits. That sounds good.
Yeah. I also watched, what's it called? A Guide to Dying.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. I have thoughts on that one. You go first.
Okay. Yeah, it was all right. It was a little bit mental. The thing that threw me a bit, though, is that I spent part of the time that I was watching it wondering if that actor was Bryan Cranston, and then I was like, that can't be Bryan Cranston, but he really looks like him in like certain points in that film.
Did you think?
Yeah, I thought we did at first. That's I was funny. Like, is this him? Is this
Walt? Is that you?
Yeah. And then it was like, oh no, maybe it's not. Yeah, but then like towards the end, it got very, I don't know, it kind of got almost a little bit Twin Peaks esque when the little fella came in, who was, I don't even know what he was meant to be honest. But yeah, I came out of it. I was a bit confused. I didn't really know what exactly had happened.
I definitely, that was one of the ones where I kind of went into it without reading the synopsis. And then I'm not going to lie, that was one of the ones where I didn't watch the full thing. I watched about half and then was like, okay, I get the sense. I get what this is about now. So then I went out and, well, not what it's about, sorry. I get, you know, what he's doing,
yeah,
or she, whoever made it. I get what they're doing. So I went out, looked at the synopsis and was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it got weird towards the end, but no, like visually it was quite interesting.
I thought the combination of doing that kind of like playing around with 360 mixed with kind of like, oh, actually now the changing of perspectives, and then the fact that you're like kind of disembodied and you're always a voyeur, but then you kind of, at one point, you kind of feel like, some of the directing I thought was quite clever, because sometimes you think you are him, but if you turn around, you can see that you're not, like, but the other actor is talking, you know, past you almost. I thought as like a kind of a concept, like the idea of, you know, a safe guide to dying. I know we've talked about the whole idea of like mental health and, mm-hmm, being a really good topic for this, and I thought there was definitely there's something there with that. I think that there is. I'm just not sure. This was very satirical almost. It was kind of,
yeah,
it wasn't meant to be like an emotional kind of drama. You weren't meant to be connected. It was more kind of high concept than that, which I think it kind of achieved, but that's just personally not my cup of tea. So
I also watched Satanism.
Oh god, is that the one where you get eaten?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Again.
Wasn't expecting that. I must admit, like at that part, I did let out a very loud, no, actually I should probably reword that. I was gonna say I did let out a very loud shit. But like verbally I said shit out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, but this isn't real. This is fine. And then and then the giant opens its mouth and you're like, this isn't good. but it was all right. That was quite interesting. And it just kind of showed it almost felt in a way like that I was on like some sort of theme park ride. Like I knew it wasn't real, but like especially like a simulator type ride. When you know it's not real, but you get that feeling that you're being like lifted into the air and stuff like that, when you know you haven't left the ground.
Yes.
So that was quite, I mean, and that was nice and short, which was good. But I didn't really know what was going on. I just assumed that there was a spelling error and it was actually Satanism. I don't know why that
that
intrigued me.
I think it would have maybe been a little bit more impactful if I knew what the reference was to, because I know it was a reference, you know, stepping inside a famous painting, but I didn't know the painting. So no, I think if you knew the painting, maybe it would be a little bit more like, wow, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about it. I mean, I didn't really read anything about these going in. I was like, let's try them all. But the other one I didn't watch, but I have already seen it anyway a few months back, was First Step.
Is that that's the space one?
Yeah, that's the one about the Apollo missions. I love that. I think it's great. I'm a sucker for anything space orientated. You know, space.
The thing I thought
always great.
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of dubious going in, because I was like, it's another space piece. And I agree with you. I think space works phenomenally in VR, and that's why there's so much of it. But because there's so much of it, I was a bit like, oh, hasn't this kind of already been done? But then obviously, like, you get into it and you're like, holy shit, have they recreated these scenes. Like, how have they even done this? It's like they make the archive footage so seamlessly integrated into the scenes. I was, it's funny because a friend of mine works for the Telegraph, and I think, was it last year that it was the anniversary of the moon landing? I think it was. I think it was like the 50-year anniversary last year or something. And she was asking me about doing like a VR piece related to that. And she said to me like, oh, would it be possible to take existing archive footage, because that's what we've got access to, and make it 360? And I said to her at the time, I doubt it. Like, I couldn't think of, I was like, I mean, I could explore it, but I don't think so, because obviously like flat media and 360 is so different. Like, I've never seen it integrated perfectly. But then I watched this and I was like, they have done this seamlessly. Like, it looks so good. And it was the first piece of 360 where it was stereoscopic, and I didn't feel like, I felt like it needed to be stereo. Like, it worked so well, and I never felt sick. Whereas I think every other piece I've seen in stereo, I was like, you know what? This doesn't add anything. This could have been done monoscopic, and I wouldn't feel like my eyes are being fucked.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. And I did actually interview one of the producers of it for one of the VR events in Altspace.
Oh, cool. That's
probably available on their YouTube or their Facebook. So if anyone's interested to hear how that was made, have a look.
Yeah, actually, that'd be really interesting. Give us the overview. How did they do that?
I can't remember. It was months ago.
Oh. made a lasting impression.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I had to do those things at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that's fair.
I was sorry. There wasn't an amount of coffee that was... keeping me awake at that point. Too much to concentrate on. But I do remember it was a very interesting interview and stuff, and she did go into a lot of detail about how they did it. So yeah, it was interesting, just evidently not interesting enough for me to remember months down the line. But go check it out, everyone. It's great.
Yes! Go check out all the selection. I think there's and go check out Dan's interview. On Via's YouTube and Facebook channel. But in general, the selection I thought was really strong. Although, this is where I'm going to say some things I probably shouldn't be saying publicly recorded on record.
Yeah.
But worldwide. You know what? Fuck it.
Oh. Wow.
I've been going through this little bit. I mean, obviously, I've been having a full-on existential crisis for a good year now, so no surprises there. I think at the core of that crisis, though, is feeling like I don't fully belong in the VR world anymore. And I've been trying to like drill down into what that means, because when I'm like on Instagram and I'm interacting with, you know, like the kind of people that will be listening to this, when I'm interacting with you guys, when I'm interacting with you, Dan, when I'm interacting with, you know, Ben or Hugh, or like, you know, people that exist in the kind of online VR community, I feel like I feel happy, and I feel like we're all doing good together, and we're a real solid community. And I love that. Outside in the kind of the quote unquote real world, though, I feel like the VR industry, especially in the UK, is divided into two camps. It's kind of it's the high arts crowd and the entrepreneurial commercial crowd. And that's two very different kind of audiences. And although the characters in those both of those kind of sectors cross over, they are quite separate. And what I find really difficult is I love everyone. Genuinely, everyone that I've ever met in the VR industry has been absolutely lovely. But the more I kind of see content on the festival circuit, the more I network or just chat or just generally connect with the art, the more of the arts crowd, the more I think, I just don't know whether I fully belong in this crowd, because like, you know, with the Tribeca stuff, 50% at least I was kind of, you know, oh, you know, this is great, and I can really appreciate this piece. but it's just not me. I just find it all. I just find art in general. I find it really difficult to wrap my head around. And maybe I'm just basic, but I just find it difficult to, I'm just like, you know, when there's something and you're just like, I don't know what that was. And an artist can be like, oh, well, that was an interpretation of the divide in society and the austerity is increasingly, you know, destroying our morals. Like, and I'm like,
you just painted a canvas, cool. Mate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I feel like the joke is, I feel like everyone feels like that. But for me, I just find it really difficult to kind of be like, I don't want to make pieces like that. And I love the people that do. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like at all I disagree with that art form, because I think it's phenomenal. And if you've got an idea like that and you go for it and you believe in it so much that you can put a fucking banana on the wall with a bit of duct tape and call it art and sell it for whatever that ridiculous art piece sold for, then good on you. Like, power to you. I love the conversations that I can have with artists. I think they're brilliant. They are big thinkers. But when it comes to what the kind of content I want to make and I want to watch, that's just not it. Like, there's not. You know what I mean? Like, how do you feel about that?
I tell you what, I'm exactly the same. My friend still mocks me for this to this day. Years ago, I went out just for like the day in London with a friend, because he wanted to go to the Tate on his birthday, and I'd never been at that point. And that was the first time I'd ever been. I'd walked around. I didn't really understand it. Again, like I said, there was a canvas painted white, literally just painted white, and I was like, oh, but it's white. And then you read the little thing, it's like, yeah, but it's his white. He created that. No, he didn't. How do you know that? Like, how could you possibly know that he created that white? Out of everyone in the world, he did that.
Yeah.
And then there's just like random stuff, like every like day-to-day stuff. They've still got it there now. Is that there's just like three Coke bottles, each like filled to a different degree. And that's it. That's the entire thing. It's like, but it's just a Coke bottle. I don't understand it. And at one point I was, because I got to a point where I didn't even know what was part of the exhibition and what wasn't. And at one point my friend came over and I was looking at a fire alarm and I thought it was part of the thing. And he was like, what are you looking at that for? And I was like, I don't know. It's just a fire alarm. It's like, I don't get it. And he's like, it's because it is a fire alarm. I was like, oh.
Yes. Oh, okay.
And then there was another, and also like that, probably about 10-15 minutes later, there was this little alcovey bit, and there was a guy who looked like a security guard that sat down just like reading a paper, and I was just standing there looking at him, and then he looked around at me. He's like, you're right mate. And it threw me, because I was like, oh my god, is he meant to break character? And then but he was actually just a security guard that was just on having a break. And I was just like, it's part of it.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's the thing with the arts world, right? And then, like, I don't know, that maybe it's just like, then you, then it's maybe like you, your own kind of like beating yourself up of like, oh, am I just stupid? Do I just not get it? But like, from an outside perspective, in an art exhibition, that could very have easily been an art piece. Like, easily, that could have been like some kind of like setup thing. A fire alarm could have very easily been like that's the thing that I don't really get. And I think the joke is, what I'm coming to realize, because I've got a lot of friends now that are in that world, the more I speak to them, the more I realize that they all just agree that they all know that that's what's going on. Like, they all know that it's a little bit ridiculous. But they do it anyway. because it's not for you, it's for them. And I find that really strange.
I learned a long time ago that, you know, these things are subjective, you know, and nothing's perfect. Because by that definition, it means that everyone in the world will like it. And that's never the case. But again, it's about what you're interested in. But because of that, do you watch these and feel like that's the kind of stuff that you should be making then, or?
I don't feel like it's the kind of stuff that I should be making, but I think there's a reality check in the in the creative VR community, there's this reality check that the only sector that at the moment has A, funding available, and B, an infrastructure that can support VR exhibitions is the arts world. And that that's a generalization for the UK, because obviously that's like what I kind of know about. But, you know, venues are already set up with these kind of exhibit-like rooms that you could very easily turn into like a VR exhibition. These venues are very used to kind of having a kind of an arts crowd that are willing to take a risk on something new, because that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
Because someone that goes to the View cinema to watch the latest Star Wars movie is not the same kind of person that goes to their independent art center just to have a gander at the new exhibit. And also in terms of financials, you know, in a film context, and we found this doing like the pop-up VR cinema in a independent arts venue. So it was kind of interesting because it was like a film format in and with a arts audience in an arts venue. And the perception of value is very different. So whereas a film audience is very used to paying between £5 and £10 for a cinema ticket for a feature length film. So to try and get them to pay, you know, more than a fiver to come and watch a short film, essentially in a VR headset, is very, very different to, you know, an arts kind of venue, which might pay the artist a set fee of like between £250 and £500 to show their piece. And then it becomes either free or ticketed because it's part of an exhibit. And so it's financially, I think if you want to make original content, there is absolutely no denying, unless you're going to go down the games route and go direct to consumer, you have to kind of be in the world of the arts world. And that might change. And obviously the work that I was pre-COVID doing with the BFI was kind of that, was trying to find a way to make bringing VR to a kind of more mainstream, more film-based audience, more accessible. And you know, I think so it's not that I feel pressure to make that kind of content, but if you're going to be quote unquote successful, or if you're going to have a piece shown, like even if you just want people eyeballs on your piece, you have to target it at the festival circuit. And I'm increasingly realizing that the kind of content that I make or the stuff that I'm interested in, I don't know whether it will appeal, because the people that are curating, and they're brilliant people and they've got great taste, but it's an arts audience. It's not like, you know, you don't apply to Sundance Film Festival with a VR piece and get someone, and I could be wrong, but I'm generalizing here, but you don't get someone who is like a film expert curating that. You get someone that is an expert in the artistic form of immersive. And that's very different, because they generally come from an arts background, or, you know, that it's skewed that way. And I find it, don't get me wrong, I find that really odd, because I don't find it odd in the sense of, for the reasons why I've just said, the financial kind of like model is there. But I find it odd because you think Sundance Film Festival, you think it like, you know, gritty, independent, scrappy DIY filmmakers that go on to become like these legends, and they start with like a shitty film filmed on an iPhone. You know, it's all about the story. It's all about character. That is not what works well in VR at the moment. And that's an interesting distinction.
Yeah. But then, I mean, you say about like the arty stuff that gets in, like I wouldn't have thought something like Attack on Daddy would have got into, you know, a reputable festival like Tribeca.
Oh, really?
Like I never would have put those two together.
Why? Why'd you say that?
I don't know. It just seems a bit too out there. And a bit too, I don't know, it just felt a bit random. There wasn't really much of a story to it.
No, the story was
just a bit weird.
Yeah, they go into the dollhouse, like they get kidnapped to go to the dollhouse or whatever, and then they like, get...
How do you get there?
Like, don't know.
What's happening?
But that's the point, right? That's the artsy fartsy part. That's not the film, like a film, from a film perspective, it's like, what's the story? In an arts world, it's like, it's not about the story, it's about the message. It's about, It's about the feeling, like, right? I mean, I don't know.
What was the
meeting? I don't know.
I imagine someone watched this is like, this makes no sense. It's in.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Kind of. Like, I don't know. Sometimes, I mean, that's what it feels like. Not to shit all over, like, the festival circuit, but I do feel sometimes you do to see that. You see pieces and you go, I think this has gotten in because the person watching it was like, I have no idea what the fuck I just watched.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
perfect yeah. for an arts crowd.
So back in the day, and obviously we've established that I'm old, so this is going back quite a while. I went to an induction day at a university in Surrey for a film studies course.
Yeah.
And just before we broke up for lunch, they took us into the editing suite that they had. And there was this girl who was editing her short film. And the guy was like, oh, do you mind if we watch what you've done so far? And she was like, yeah, no problem. Honestly, I had no idea what was going on. There was just four people sat at a picnic table, and this picnic table was like by this cliff or whatever, like the top. And then at one point, I think a guy gets a gun out, and then one of the girls gets up and then runs and jumps off the cliff. And I'm like, what the hell was that about? Mm. And then they showed us another documentary that that one of their past students had made about this festival somewhere in this like small town in rural Spain, where once a year they go up to the top of this hill and let fireworks off during the day. And you're like, all I took out of that was like, you don't know how fireworks work. Like, who's seeing that during the day?
Yeah,
like, go overnight. Go overnight. That's how it works. Like, makes no sense. Funny. But the only thing that intrigued me about it is that they said, "Oh yeah," and the people that the students that made it managed to blag free flights off of British Airways. And I was like, "Oh, that sounds
cool. That's actually legit.
Sounds all right." But yeah, in the end, I was just like, you know what? I can't be bothered with this because this. Like, they're making stuff that I had no interest in making. This stuff doesn't really make any sense to me. And obviously, this is going back to how old I am. This was also around the time that DVD players were becoming a bit of a thing at home. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to just buy DVDs and just watch all of the director's commentaries.
And get my DIY education from cool. that. Yeah,
and that's
love great. That
and saved
no I love that
student loan.
But that's the thing is and the thing that obviously we have to acknowledge is because the VR industry is so young and in comparison to cinema there's no one doing it basically if you compared like on a one-to-one basis. So obviously within cinema there's like film like me and you, we have totally different taste in movies, and that's great because there's enough content because we're living in such like a an overwhelming content world now. There's plenty of stuff, but I wonder whether that is harmful to VR because it is a medium that is coming up in a time where we are so used to being able to see the content that we want to see, like me with the Tribeca selection. I'm not going to sit there and watch whatever it would be, like 2 hours worth of content for the sake of watching it. I perceive my time to be more valuable than that, which is hilarious saying that out loud. But do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not
given everything going on.
Yeah, exactly. I've got like bare donuts to eat and stuff. I've got sunshine to enjoy. So I think for me, it's like, because we live in this world where it's like, you know, your algorithm tailors to you. I get, you know, all the videos that I want to see. And I'm not, if I'm 2 minutes into a YouTube video and I don't like it, I'm not just to kind of pay homage to the video creator that put it together. I'm not going to watch the full 15 minutes if it doesn't hook me. I'm going to change. And because we're so used to that, because that is our behavior as consumers now, I feel like that's transplanting over to VR. And the difficulty with that is obviously, because there's not many people making it, therefore there's not enough you know, there's not enough selections for people to choose from. And so therefore, if someone loves Japanese horror, are there enough Japanese horror VR? Yeah, are there enough Japanese horror pieces to hook that person?
I like
on
this
VR
guy.
Yeah, you two would get on. But you know what I mean? It's kind of like, will that, do you think that will be harmful for our industry long term?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you that there doesn't really seem to be as much content as I'd like to watch. It's just always the same stuff over and over again. So I end up finding myself revisiting the same things. But then, I don't know. This is one of the things I was thinking about yesterday, because, you know, like we discussed even last episode or the episode before, then we watch a lot of YouTube. Let's face it, who doesn't now? And I am someone who is very I'm very easily not very easily influenced, but very easily inspired by things I watch. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool to do something like that. And I feel like because of the amount of content that's on YouTube, it keeps changing my perception on things and what my actual interests are. Oh, sorry, I just dropped a pen.
That's interesting.
So I did another cull of stuff and channels that I watch. Because again, and I've said this before, it's all the videos just seem the same to me now. Like in terms of what is now in regards to YouTube anyways, the concept of a filmmaker is all these like quick flashy transitions, and it doesn't really, it seems to be more style over substance for me. And that's my personal take on it. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it looked great. One guy, Brandon Lee, is phenomenal at what he does, and his stuff is superb, and I've followed his career for quite a few years now. But I'll watch his stuff and feel like I should be making stuff like that, and it's like, how do I incorporate these flashy transitions into VR? And it's like, probably couldn't really, because it'd be weird. It's like just everyone puking. If I had something that was showing at like a big screen in, and then just like everyone simultaneously puking at the same time,
just started puking. At least you nailed it.
Yeah, I think to a degree.
They're all doing what you wanted them to.
This is not really. This is not ideal, but at the same time, it's a little bit funny. But then you sort of think back to the filmmakers that inspired you as a kid that you grew up on. Like, so for me, you know, being an 80s kid, it's the likes of Spielberg and things like that. And you think, well, they never had any of this. They obviously, you know, they had films and filmmakers that inspired them, but it wasn't to the degree like it is now, where it's just all this flashy stuff in your face all the time. So my approach now is just to kind of strip back the amount I watch in terms of stuff like that. I don't plan on watching any sort of filmmaking tutorials and stuff on YouTube anymore, because again, it's just going to show me what the flavor of the day is.
So true. So true.
And again, sort of just sticking with Vimeo. Vimeo is going to be my main source of watching stuff that inspires me. And again, everyone has a different thing, but it's not flashy transitions in every doc or short film and stuff like that. And I'm hoping that would help bring my own visions to any sort of future projects and stuff, and not feel like I have to kind of do what everyone else is doing to be relevant, if you know what
totally. I think that's a really good idea.
And yeah, it's like I say, it's like, you know, you watch all this stuff that is the flavor of the month on YouTube, and you know, I'm trying to think, oh yeah, how do I do this but in VR? So you know, then bring like a 360 video up to, you know, the standards that regular video is on YouTube nowadays. And you're like,
well, I think
it isn't the same thing.
I think, I can't remember whether we talked about this offline or on a previous podcast episode, but I think in essence, what you're scratching at there is the fact that at the moment, a lot of content is based around the tech. It's based around like people go into it with like, well, what can the tech do first? Which to some extent has to be done, I guess, because there are so many limitations. But I was thinking about the, you know, the Matt Diavella and Casey Neistat kind of ilk of YouTuber who, yes, their craft is filmmaking, but that is very rarely what they're actually talking about. They're very rarely actually talking about filmmaking. Like with Matt, he talks about obviously productivity and self-development, but it's through, he's using his love of filmmaking and he experiments with his format to get the point across, which is, you know, which is like the subject, which is totally different to filmmaking. And Casey Neistat, he was the same. Like, even though he's like probably one of the most prolific filmmakers on YouTube, and obviously he had a traditional cinema and TV career before he came to YouTube, he very rarely did videos that were about like filmmaking. Yes, he would do like tech reviews and he would focus a lot on technology, but really every episode was more like a, it was kind of, it's a self-contained story about his day or like things that he was thinking. I think that for me has been really interesting, is thinking about what or who are the creators in VR that are making stuff that feels right to them and feels authentic and something they're actually interested in. And VR just happens to be the vehicle. And there's probably a shit ton of them. There's probably loads of people doing that. But we don't know about them because generally speaking in the VR world, you tend to, you know, just know other VR creators who define themselves by the fact that they work in VR. And I absolutely do that. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. But moving beyond that, it's like, well, how do we, how do we get beyond that? And at the moment, I don't think we can, purely because the consumers that have VR headsets are either gamers or people that work in VR. And there's no in between at the moment. And until we get kind of an early majority where the mainstream starts to, you know, becomes the norm for them. And, you know, to be really honest, I don't know whether that will happen for a long, long time. Like it makes me, I've been definitely thinking recently about, I mean, I really hate the idea of having to retrain because I'm feeling particularly lazy. But I've definitely been thinking about the early days of 360 and how I remember getting into that and being like, holy shit, I've got to like learn this whole new format. And now I'm wondering whether, do I need to open up my skill set again? Do I need to learn how to create AR assets? Can I film someone, you know, on my phone? As like on a kind of green screen background, use a software like HoloMe or some of the other kind of volumetric things that turns that asset into, you know, like a little volumetric video that you can then, you know, is that the next thing? Like, because especially with COVID, it makes me think, you know, the momentum that location based VR had before all of this happened. That is going to be dead in the goddamn water, and it sucks, but it's the reality that we have to face. That if you're not in the, if you're in the commercial space, I think you're safe. If you're in the gaming space, I think you're safe, because those two things will continue to have momentum. In fact, they might pick up momentum because VR is more and more important now than ever in those sectors. But if you are a creator, if you are looking to make original content, is now the time that you need to be thinking about pivoting or expanding and using those skills that you've learned in VR and translating them to spatial storytelling in all formats. So that's mobile AR. That could be, you know, AR glasses when they arrive in the next few years. Like, just kind of thinking about that is something that I've been kind of thinking about for a while now, because I think the writing is on the wall that that is the next move for kind of for consumers anyway. That will be the next wave. That will be the next, you know, from pictures to motion picture, from motion picture to television, from television to content creators on YouTube. Is that next thing going to be spatial storytellers who, you know, come out of the screen and stuff that exists in your real world? I don't know, but it's definitely something that I'm thinking about.
Interesting.
What's your opinion on things like storytelling with AR and things? I mean, I've never seen it done well.
To be honest, I've never really thought about it. I'm not massively technical, if I'm honest.
Yeah, me neither.
I think that was one of the things that I struggled with when I was still doing, you know, standard marketing videos and things like that, having to sort of wear all the hats.
Yeah.
Whereas I just want to sort of focus on what's going on, like on camera, rather than have to worry about, yeah, you know, have I got all these settings right? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, have I hit record on the audio recorder? All this. So yeah, no, I haven't really thought about AR storytelling, to be honest. I'm kind of at a moment now. I've especially yesterday, I've kind of accepted that in terms of business and stuff like that, this year's probably going to be a bit of a write-off.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I find that quite freeing. So, like, you know, it's probably worth finding another source of income for the time being. But then because my outgoings are low, I don't have to bring in a massive amount. And obviously we can't go out anywhere, so I haven't got money to spend. Don't have to spend any money and stuff, because I've got nowhere to go. And all the trips I had planned this year are dead in the water. So that's going to save me some money. So then it leaves me free time to actually work on creative projects and things that I'm passionate about. So I've started making lists and stuff. I've already started writing the anthology. The VR anthology series that I spoke about before. And my cousin's on board to do the music for it and stuff, which is awesome because he's a crazy talented musician, and it makes me sick, Alex. It makes me sick. So
talented. Talented people are the worst.
So busy working on that.
That's good.
And some other things. So in some ways, I don't know, I feel like, because I think I was, prior to this, I was spending most of my time, you think about the business side and how you're bringing money in and stuff like that. You don't, I don't know, that kind of overtakes everything else for me personally. And I'll think more about that than the actual creative stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I never get to work on the stuff I want to work on. Because I'm too busy thinking about how I bring money in. But if there's something else that takes that away from takes it off my hands, then I can focus all my free time on that.
So that's my
plan for the rest of the year. So there's
a
fair amount of 360 projects. I've already started like documenting my day-to-day in 360 anyway, my quarantine life.
Your quarantine diaries.
So yeah, I've already started that.
The thing is,
thinking about that, it's like, I can't go anywhere. So is it really going to be that interesting? But I guess kind of find out.
Well, I guess it'll all be about like the thoughts that you're having.
It will be interesting, you pull that together. Further down the line, whenever that may be. Again, it's like one of those things like, I don't know how this will end. Because
oh my god, flash forward to 2021 and we're like, so day number 1600, like I can't do math.
I've got like a full Tom Hanks beard.
Yep, Wilson.
we'll
play it by ear. I'm gonna have to run because I've just realized I'm meant to be on a call, but I think we've covered some interesting stuff, and I know that we wanted to talk about like pitching and things like that, but
yes,
it definitely felt like
we can do
that. Let's do that in the next episode. And I think there was a couple of other things that people had suggested that they wanted us to talk about. Cool. So maybe we'll actually get round to that at some point in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome.
Well, for now, thank you for listening, everyone. Yes, Dan, thanks. It's been fabulous as always.
Hasn't it just?
Always, you can find.
We've had a bit of a grown-up conversation this week.
We didn't even ramble once, and everyone's listening.
Did we?
Like,
we think we're on a massive tangent.
These two definitely not self-aware. I feel like we got into some good weeds. We got into the weeds today. We got into some detail, and it felt very therapeutic and good.
Very
good. Awesome. Go us.
Yeah.
The last minute's just us congratulating ourselves.
If that isn't worth a good review on iTunes, I don't know what is.
You can leave us a 5-star review or whatever star you want to give us. That would be great. Find us on Instagram. I'm Alex Makes VR.
And I am Daniel K. Hatton.
And we will see you in the next one. Bye.
Stay safe.